You're smart. Your TV is smart. That's why you cut the cord. But you need one more thing.
Alaska's News Source. Watch live or when it's convenient for you, here's how.
Just search Alaska's News Source on Roku, Apple TV, Amazon Fire, or Android TV. Install and enjoy.
It's completely free and has everything you need in one spot.
Breaking news.
Statewide weather. In-depth investigations.
Start streaming Alaska's News Source live today.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Parenting in the Far North. I'm your host, Ariane Aaron-Bureau. Today's guest is the clinic director at the Cohen Clinic at Alaska Behavioral Health. She has over 20 years of experience as a clinician working directly with active duty military, veterans, and military family members. She's worked in the mental health arena for 24 years and has yet to find a corner where hope does not exist. Please welcome to the podcast, Mary Beth Goodman. Mary Beth, thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much, Ariane.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. First, just tell me a little bit about yourself. I know you're a mom. You're also a veteran spouse who moved here when your husband was active duty in the Air Force.
Yes. So I am a mom, an active duty mom, and then a veteran mom. I have two beautiful children going into their teenage years.
Ooh, teenagers.
Yes, what indeed. A 12-year-old and a 15-year-old to be 16 in less than 2 months.
Which I'm sure they remind you
constantly.
All the time.
But in all seriousness, the lifestyle that we were truly privileged to have throughout our military career really caused them to be these amazing children, and watching them bloom in there forever has just been lovely up here in Alaska.
I love that. So when you moved to Alaska, had you known much about it? What was your initial reaction? Because we moved here. My dad was military. I'm a military brat, if you will. I thought Alaska was like so far away and kind of a shock. Did you and your family kind of get the same?
No. So kind of the opposite.
Really?
I was raised as an Army brat.
Okay.
And then married Air Force. The joke there is better housing. Ha ha. But we tried for all of our careers to get to Alaska, and it just wasn't in the cards for us. And then so when the pandemic hit, originally there was this wonderful opportunity to start the Cohen Clinics here in Alaska. And so I moved ahead of my family. I always joke that that was my PCS, even though I was an active duty military. And then my husband followed along when he retired 6 months later. And when the kiddos were doing all of that remote learning, we got to have them even earlier in Alaska. And so they had this really great experience of being able to be kids, even though the time when the world was shutting down and everything was going so isolated, I feel like we in Alaska did it right. We really had this wonderful opportunity to still have so many outdoor activities. There were so many opportunities for them to still meet friends and get out there, even though we were protecting their health care as well.
Oh, great. So I know we're going to talk a little bit about the Cohen Clinic and what it does, but we're recording this podcast. If you are listening, this is the end of March, but we're going into April, which is a very special month because it is the month of the military child. Tell me a little bit about that, what you want families to know, and kind of what umbrella does that fall under?
Sure. You know, it's fun to me because we have a day for everything, right? There's even a National Taco Day, right? We have these crazy days where we really just get to recognize and enjoy certain things. But we have an entire month dedicated to the military child. We want to talk about how resilient they are, what they really go through. Most military kids move 5 times before their parents transition out of the active duty component. My kiddos, when we got here to Alaska, they were in 4th and 6th grade, mm-hmm. and it was already their 7th school.
Like, oh, wow.
That's okay. Amazing. When you really put kind of get down into that, you know, nuts mm-hmm. and bolts of what we're asking of them, they're saying hello and goodbye to so many friends, hello and goodbye to so many sports teams and activities and loves. They get to maybe try an activity in one state that they truly felt was their passion, and then maybe it's just not available in the next state they live in. And these military kids have really said hello and goodbye even to their families when their parents are deploying or they're no longer with their external families like their grandparents or their aunties and uncles. You know, and they really have to say hello and goodbye so much more than the non-military family would ever even dream of. And so they become these wonderful, resilient little bundles of energy. They become assertive and independent, but they also sometimes become anxious and they have needs that go unfulfilled. And so it's a wonderful month to really step back and say, what can we do for them as a community, right? Alaska loves its military. It's so wonderful that and so embraced here. But what can we do for those kiddos? How can we truly say, while these kids are here for 2 to 3 years, how can we grow them? How can we help their families have a better experience in Alaska, but also have those parents serve the military while they're here?
Which would lead me into what are some tips that the parents can do to help build up that resilience in kids. You mentioned your kids moved 7 times between 4th and 5th grade. I was just thinking back. My dad moved us here when I was in 4th grade. That was, I believe, our 4th move. So I can only imagine 3 more times than that. So for parents, because sometimes they might forget, you know, you're on the move, you adapt. What about for the kiddos? Any tips that they can be doing to help them make that transition?
Sure. Within the military community and even in the civilian community, whenever we're moving children, it's really important to have some type of stability. And that might be as simple as they have their own pillow and their own blanket in the hotel room. It might be in this day and age where we're so interconnected with technology, maybe they get to game with their friends from a different assignment. You know, my son still keeps in touch with kiddos from 3 and 4 and 5 assignments ago, when the reality is a lot of us don't still have connections with kids we met in 2nd grade. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty important. I always say parents really need to listen in moments like this as well. Sometimes tantrums are truly just, I am overwhelmed. We have the privilege as parents to say, okay, I'm having a bad day. I'm just going to take a moment, go grab a soda, grab a cup of coffee. But we don't allow our kids to disengage. You know, like be at the table, keep your room door open. You need to be at school. You need to be at this activity. And so sometimes it's just really giving them the space to have those meltdowns and then go right back into it. It's not a disciplinary situation. It's a, you're allowed to have those feelings. Okay, let's get back into life now.
That's such a good point, because even, you know, as a mom and practicing that with my daughter when she's maybe a little bit more frustrated in the morning, just taking a moment to realize, like, okay, I've been frustrated before, and how would I feel if somebody's like, fix your attitude right now and change it, you know, giving them that space, which leads me into my next thing. We're talking about some of the 5 senses to ground the kids and having those calm, big feelings. I like that word, the big feelings, which a lot might be experiencing on a big move, and especially a move to a place like Alaska.
Absolutely. So this is kind of where I'm going to nerd out a little bit. I love this part of brain development. You know, we only learn in 5 different ways. We see it, we taste it, we touch it, we smell it, or we hear it. There's no other way that we learn. And when we get stressed out, when our distress tolerance really is the lowest, we start reacting from our brainstem, which means fight, flight, or freeze. Mm-hmm. And so we're not really seeing what's around us. We're not able to see, oh, wait, that's a path for success. All we're seeing is that we're grounded into what we know is true. And so simply having parents remind kiddos of that, and it might be as simple as putting an ice-cold glass of water in front of them and having them wrap their hands around it. You know, everyone loves smells. You know, the aromatherapy is kind of big. But the reality is sometimes just a bolt of like peppermint gum will wake up taste buds, wake up your smell. I have a mom that I've taken a lot of advice from, and she always joked about the lip balm that's really eucalyptus-y. I won't say a brand name.
Yeah.
And basically she just wipes it on the kid's mouth every now and again, or encourages a teenager, hey, grab your lip balm and put that on right now. Mm-hmm. It's pretty chapped lips right now. But what that does is it's a tactile for your lips. You're tasting it, but it's also waking up your sense of smell. And your olfactory, your sense of smell, is your biggest sensation. That is your biggest awareness. And so it can connect you to different memories. And so even if there's something like maybe it's your kids really missing their grandparents, maybe it's making sure that you've got grandma's perfume. Maybe it's making sure that you're baking bread because that's what grandma did, or cookies or whatever it is. Here in Alaska, it's also about getting outdoors, right?
Oh,
we have this huge privilege to live here.
Totally agree.
And sometimes it's just making sure, hey, let's have this conversation on the porch, but it's 20 degrees. Let's have this conversation on the porch, right? Because that cold air and that it just wakes our senses up, and it gets that frontal cortex firing. And so we're no longer in fight and flight. We're using those 5 senses to really get into that cognitive brain where all of us can solve problems so much better.
How would you say for parents when they're dealing with kind of the little kids making this transition versus middle and high school? Do you find one age is it's a little bit harder than the other?
You know, I think every parent's going to argue that what they're going through right now is the hardest. Some parents have kiddos who have sensory integration issues, and so little is a lot harder because they can't talk as much about what's going through. But I just ask you to be aware, right? Like, we all look at our kids, and my son laughs at me all the time. He's like, Mom, I'm not your baby anymore, right? But we look at our kids as little and not having the ability to solve problems. And our job as parents is to really give them independence and grace, let them make mistakes, but also let them solve their own problems. We're raising so much more assertive, independent, and really good adults when we let them have those meltdowns and let them work through that. We don't want to rescue our children. We want to come alongside of them and be their mentors, their teachers, their parents, their boundary setters.
Yeah.
But we don't want to be their rescuers. And so in those situations, I'm always going to ask, is this harder for you because you can't rescue your kid? Right? Like, this kid's going to experience pain right now. Mm-hmm. Moves are tough. Changing schools are tough. Saying goodbye is tough. And that's okay.
Let's talk a little bit about the clinic, who that serves. I know that's a big passion of yours as well.
It is. So I work for the Stephen A. Cohen Military Family Clinic at Alaska Behavioral Health. We are an outpatient mental health agency that serves family members, service members, and veterans, so the SMVF population.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, if you wore a uniform or associated with anyone who wore the uniform, we're going to serve you. And so what that means here is National Guardsmen or reservists. We've got a lot of therapeutic services. We do groups. We do individual therapy, family therapy. We work with trauma. We work with adjustment disorders. So basically anything that you might need help with, we're going to have those solutions to offer.
How was that during the pandemic? Just seeing that transition, not only with military families, but, you know, some of the veterans that you all serve.
Right. You know, it's funny. I was joking with someone the other day that the coffee pot was actually the biggest source of argument within our clinic because we were very privileged. But what we couldn't do was offer communal beverages, right? So the coffee pot went away. And when it comes to military families, I feel like the coffee pot or the Lego play center, these are the cruxes to our community, right? Like, everyone talks over the coffee pot. Everyone, you know, the parents come together over the shared toys. And so we were able to do some really kind of fun activities. We did this mindfulness series with teenagers in our community where we actually did telehealth. And we taught them how to build with Lego and how it awoke in their tactile sense. And how we did some art therapy and how it awoken that side of their brain. And then for the fourth part of it, we brought the parents in and they got to see all of these projects their kids did. And they were like, I thought you were just playing games. Like, you know, like it was so fun to watch that. It really sparked our creativity. We really had to get in there and figure out other ways because we weren't going away. Mental health was something that we weren't going to deprive the community of during the pandemic. But we just really had to think outside the box in ways to deliver it.
I feel like the pandemic really kind of blew the lid wide open on mental health and bringing awareness to it. For a long time, it was a stigma, and in some cases, it still is. And I know, especially for military members, you know, my dad was ex-military; he was in the Air Force, and just kind of having that sense of I'm the provider, the strong one. You know, what do you say to that of being able to be vulnerable and? How do some of these veterans and these military members, men and women, kind of come out of that tough, you know, comfort zone that they've been kind of ingrained in and know so for so long?
Yeah. And, you know, and one of the things that we were really able to do about stigma reduction during the pandemic is mental health is healthcare, period. If your tough body would jump out of an airplane and break a leg, you would immediately seek care. You would immediately go to PT. You would start rehabbing that and you would get better. If your family is stumbling through perhaps an infidelity or a divorce or just an adjustment that's really, really difficult, it's no different than a broken leg. You need to get help. You need to get in there. You need to start doing PT, rehab, which in our mental health words is therapy or group or homework, right? Your therapist is going to assign you homework. And so it's so wonderful to be able to say, we really have destigmatized because we know so much more, right? I know that if you have depression, there's a really good chance it's your serotonin level that's decreased. It has nothing to do with weakness. It has nothing to do with anything except the chemical levels in our body are not where they need to be. Now, the great thing about it is we know that therapy works. We have these evidence-based techniques that can take you from this, I feel broken, I feel fragile, to I can do life again with confidence and security. We know that these techniques worked. We have years of experience now in research studies that are behind us. And those are the kind of techniques that we do at the clinic, a cognitive-based approach, cognitive processing therapy, EMDR, prolonged exposure. And these are techniques that we know work. And so we can work with that population that almost has a little bit of machismo or that, that bravery to them. And it's, we don't just light candles and talk about our feelings, right?
Yeah.
We are doing real science behind closed doors.
And that is brave, going and taking that first step. What would be the baby step if somebody's a little bit still reluctant, you know, walking through the doors? I would think that's the first step, is just even coming like into the clinic.
Sure. So we have monthly activities that we do, and we usually work with VSOs. So like for February, we did a date night and we made charcuterie boards. And
Yum.
I know, right? So much fun. They learned how to make little sausage roses. And but during that event, our case manager actually came in and did a psychoeducational activity about communication and how couples can communicate better. And so it was really low key, and they got to work together. And once a month, we do an event like that. It might be family centered. For Month of the Military Child, we're going to be doing some rock painting and some cupcake decorating, where the whole family can come in and just do those activities. And then some of it's, you know, one on one, meaning, you know, more of just a come in to have some questions answered. We do seminars to answer questions. If you have questions about VA benefits, we might have someone come in who's an expert in that. So it's, we're really trying to break that down. And if any of you listeners out there have an idea, we're always happy to listen to that and see if we can put that into place, because great ideas come from really great people other than myself.
Well, you heard it there. Yes. And the ideas. Talk a little bit about the grieving part or the loss, or maybe someone's on deployment and the other spouse is having to kind of hold down the fort. Is that something that you guys address as well, or give help in that area?
Absolutely. And we have a lot of families right now who are struggling with deployments of some sense. There's a lot of things going on that are going to be taking one partner away. Even on our veteran families, we have a lot of those partners who are working on the slope or are working away from their family for a few weeks. And it's a little bit different than single parenting, right? Because as a single parent, we just put it all on our back and go forward. It's us or nothing. But with that dual family, you're a single parent, but you don't want to ostracize the other person. You want to make sure they're aware, so you have conversations. You might send that member, you know, my husband always had a Matchbox car, a Lego set, and my daughter's favorite book.
Aww.
And so whenever they were deployed, they could basically transverse the screen because they could play together, right? But that only goes so far. There's no such thing as a virtual hug. I know we send them to each other, but there's no substitution for that parental touch or that caregiver touch. But it really is making those opportunities and prioritizing. We tell people all the time, in this day and age, we are so busy. If it's not scheduled, it doesn't happen. And so those scheduled times where families are away from each other to really make sure every day from 4 to 4:30, you know, mom, dad, kiddos, auntie, tia, uncle, whoever it is, are all coming together. Or maybe it's only every Tuesday because there's practices. Guilt and anxiety is really difficult because kids don't want to give up hockey practice. Kids don't want to give up football season. They don't want to give up honor choir. What they want to do is have everything and have the parent kind of fill in and observe like they always have, right? They just show up and watch me. Well, we've got to prioritize that. We've got to say, okay, you know what? Mom's got her phone out, and you can listen to the concert. Or we're sending this video, you know, to maybe the family uncle who's really not the uncle but has always been there, right? There's all of these opportunities to really kind of connect, but we have to be very intentional about it.
Talk about the support system. I know you touched on it, like, you know, the uncles or family friends. How important is that? And also that transition when the other parent does come back from maybe that deployment, does that take a little bit of time for the family to kind of gel back together?
It does. And there's so many different support systems. We as individuals really reach out for support where we're most comfortable. So for some families, that might be in the spiritual component, mm-hmm. and they might find a second local family in their church community. They might find a second local community in their activities, right? Like the soccer mom club or the hockey mom club. You can kind of tell my kid plays hockey. But when the other person comes back in, there's that level of, I want them to know everything, but they're also adjusting, right? When someone's coming back from a deployment, they may have been crawling through sand with a gun on their back. They may have been in a very austere northern climate during training where they really haven't slept in a warm, cozy bed. And they might need a day or two to actually acclimate themselves mm-hmm. before that stimulation of kids. For those of you who are parents out there, you know, you walk in the door at the end of the day and it's
go time.
It is go time. And so educating the family, all family members, that, hey, go time might look a little different. You know, let's stage it. You know, maybe it's, you know, you get first today, they get first tomorrow, or maybe it's we all meet outside at a park so that there's more ability to yell and run and play if the person who's coming back into the family maybe is sensitive to noises. Mm-hmm. You know, let's face it, some of our military members who've come back, some of our veterans are really, really dealing with traumatic reactions, whether it's post-traumatic stress disorder or just a trauma response. Educating up front, and there are some wonderful children's books out there. You know, My Daddy Has a Dragon in His Tummy, and some of them are very, you know, age appropriate for different mm-hmm. levels, but it helps to educate before we're reuniting to understand, hey, this is what to expect. We've been doing this for a lot of years now, the military community, and we're so much better at it than we ever were. We talk about these things. It's no longer, you know, just pull you up by your bootstraps and move on. It's there's more conversations. There's more ability to say we can do better and we are going to do better by these families.
And probably also reiterating the message to parents to not have to carry that guilt, especially for whoever's been deployed to come back. I have to immediately play with my kiddos or, you know, mom guilt. We all get it to just, it's okay to just take a step back. The kids will be okay.
Yes, absolutely. They're resilient for
a reason. It is amazing how resilient kids are.
Yes. And also, it's okay to apologize. Mm-hmm. If I am cranky, it is absolutely a great mentoring parent moment for me to be able to say, kiddo, I'm sorry, mom was out of line. Your room needs to be clean. I'm not mm-hmm. going to argue that, but I was wrong in yelling at you. Can you forgive me? Right? Like I always say, own it, tell them what you're sorry for, and then how can we move on? Right? Mm-hmm. Because kids can also say, I'm not ready to accept that apology yet. Yeah. I need another minute too.
What do you want families to know about resources here in Alaska and for the military families?
What I'd really like to say is resources are available. We hear over and over again that there's such a deficit of providers, a deficit of this. And the reality is the people that are here are so good. Whether it's, you know, the clinic and seeking medical help services, whether it's the VA and going through some of their medical family programs or the Office of Veterans Affairs and using the veteran benefits, whether it's the family support centers on base, there are so many resources out there. We at the clinic prioritize this, and we have a case manager. She can connect you. So even if you're not willing to seek services at this moment, you had talked about kind of like an early mm-hmm. entry, our case manager is just absolutely, she's brilliant when it comes to connecting. She's like that spoke to all mm-hmm. of the resources in town. And it might be as simple as, I really need someone to help my husband do a resume. I really need someone to help my wife interview for jobs. I really need... Chances are this person is going to help you, and we would love to connect those resources too.
You can tell you're obviously very passionate about what you do. What do you love about what you do and waking up and going into doing, you know, day after day at the clinic?
So one of the things I love about mental health is while there are outcomes, right, we want people to be healthy and happy, that is so defined by you as an individual. What joy is to me is very different than what joy is for you. But I get to walk on journeys with people. I get to meet them where they're at, give them these skills, help them realize that you don't have to wake up miserable every day. You get to wake up and find something you're passionate about. You get to love your family again. You don't have to walk on eggshells around a family member. There are solutions. And that moment of pure transformation, when I see it wash over clients' faces, whenever that happens, will keep me going for years and years and years. It truly is magic. And I mean it. I just, I've worked in this field, and I think my bio is a little outdated. I've worked in this field for about 28 years now.
Oh, okay, 28. Yeah, I think it said 24.
Right. Mm. But I've never,
still great.
I've never found an area where hope doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And that to me is magical. When we look at this world and we look at where we've got so much work to do as a community, there is so much hope still. And that to me is just magical.
Well, give us the lay of the land of how folks can reach out to you. I know a website, social media. What's the best way to connect with you all?
Sure. We try to be as easy as possible. Mm-hmm. It is a phone call. You're going to call our front desk. You're going to talk to someone who's very well educated. If there's a crisis going on, we're going to put you immediately with a licensed clinical provider so that they can navigate that and make sure that we're addressing safety. But the people who answer our front desks are just wonderful. And they're going to take care of your needs, and they're going to walk you through it all. If there's something crazy, like you need a reference or you need a referral, mm-hmm. they're going to walk you through how to get it. It really is just as simple as a phone call.
Well, I want to give you the last thought. If there's anything that you want to just mention or share or add that I didn't ask or you feel is important or whatever on your heart, I'll give you the floor.
Absolutely. What I want to say is parenting is hard. Being a couple is hard. Staying married is hard, but it's worth it. Our families give us so much joy. And if you are listening to this podcast and you're hearing something that you're like, wow, you know, I wish I had that. I wish I could have that level of happiness. There is a way for you to do that, whether it's family counseling, whether it's resources, whether it's learning how to communicate. Please don't think that there is anything that's so bad that you can't be helped through it. There is always a way to get from where you are at to feeling better.
Said it great. Mary Beth, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and chatting with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you all for listening to another episode of Parenting in the Far North. Don't forget to like and subscribe.